This is the Hot Stove Report.
Going, going, goodbye baseball!
On 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle app.
Yes, it is the Hot Stove Show. Happy to have you with us on a Tuesday evening. Aaron Goldsmith alongside Shannon Dreher. Mike Blowers, Blower Power, a little star power in the house, as always. Gary Hill as well. And, boy, guys, this is it's beginning to ramp up a little bit. We will have a pretty jam-packed show here tonight. We will be hearing from Mariners reliever Sean Armstrong. We'll be hearing from Larry Stone, Seattle Times columnist. Also, Meg Rowley of Fangraphs will be with us. Mitch Canham, who was just recently promoted to the Mariners double-A manager in Arkansas in the Texas League. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming our way. And Shannon, since our last Hot Stove Show, now this is surprising, isn't it? Jerry has made some moves since the last time we've been on the air. Knock me over with a feather.
Seemed like, you know, it was going to be a quiet holiday season, and then he destroyed New Year's Eve, which was just absolutely fine. But no, wasn't done yet. Still had some needs to fill with the roster, and added an infielder, added a reliever, and could still keep going.
I mean, this is something, Blow, that we, I think we kind of saw it coming when the deal was made to move Gene Segura to Philadelphia. J.P. Crawford comes over in exchange. Crawford, a guy who was essentially a top five prospect in the game for some time in his even earlier career, but has struggled in a limited time at the major leagues, maybe in part because of injuries that have hampered his game. I think it was pretty clear early on from Jerry that they did not want to rush JP, especially right out of the gates. So Tim Beckham, who we've seen from afar with Tampa Bay, he was 1-1, right? Number one overall draft pick. Caught fire with Baltimore most recently and had a really good stretch with the O's. He would project to be the opening day shortstop. This seems like a nice measure, a nice move by Jerry to kind of fill that space.
Yeah, something that he talked about even back in December, I believe it was, that he didn't want to rush Crawford and give him a chance to get his feet on the ground. I think it's a good idea to make this move going into spring training so then you end any talk about it and let the kid just go about his business. That's what this is really about, and we're going to see him at some point this year, but I think it just takes all the pressure off that move. And as Shannon mentioned, too, I think this is just going to continue. By the way, Aaron, it's good to see you.
Hey.
Where have you been hiding?
Well, you know, I used to be able to say that you lived in a cave someplace, but you moved at least 20 minutes closer to civilization.
I have, yes.
But I still feel that this is all on you.
What's all on
you? I mean, I'm in the greater Seattle area. You're the one who's...
Well, I mean, we've had a couple of shows, and I heard you were on the Caravan, by the way.
We, you know, you and I normally at least have a flyby on the Caravan. Not this year, though.
Yeah. Yeah, Bo was Bo had an hysterical laugh of your tweet. Did you force the autograph on the kid, or just how'd that work?
So this is amazing. So it's Justice Sheffield, Mariners now number one prospect. Came over in the James Paxton trade, of course.
Did a nice job on the show last week.
So I hear. I really enjoyed. You know, the Caravan is great on a lot of levels, but for selfish reasons, the Caravan is great, especially when you get to be with players that you don't know. Right, and you get a chance to spend 2 or 3 days, kind of minor league style, on a bus, talking with these guys and getting to know them in a much more casual setting, which is what I got to do with Justice Sheffield. And we were at a VA hospital in the Portland area, and it was just this big room, and it was almost kind of like a mixer, right? And it was us and them, and we all kind of got introduced. And then it was just a free-for-all, and you're just talking baseball with all these veterans, which was really cool. And there was a – right away, there was just kind of this awkwardness, right? Because it's like the officiant of this whole thing was kind of like, okay, everybody, go for it. And it's kind of on us to be the proactive ones to approach people, right, and say, hey, how are you? Go Mariners. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to take charge here. And I – walked right up to a veteran, and I said, hey, how you doing, sir? Would you like an autograph? Nah.
Nice start.
Okie doke. Justice, you want to come on over here?
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, like, to be honest, what's he going to do with my autograph, you know?
Wait, yeah, did it come with a picture?
Yeah,
the
headshot. Yeah, good sport coat. Oh. Hair looked good, obviously. I mean, but what's he going to do with that?
You've had a pretty nice run over the years in this Caravan thing of moments like that.
I did sign a prosthetic leg one time.
Yeah.
So we can add that to the list. There was also the...
Somebody asked you where Rick was.
That was going to go there. Yeah, that was the spring training. We were doing a barbecue dinner in spring training. It's, you know, me and 100 people who have come down to see Mariners baseball, like on a caravan, essentially. And I give my whole spiel, my rah-rah. Here's the Mariners 2017 season. This is going to be great. Anybody have any questions? Dude, all the way in the back. Yes, sir. All the way in the back. Yeah, what's your first question of the night? You know when Rick's going to do one of these? No, but this is the only one I'm doing, so he'll probably do whichever other ones are on the calendar. So I would attend that. I'm not offended at all if you start to leave immediately. And I'm sorry that this is not the answer you wanted.
This is going to be year what for you?
You ready
with
for
the Mariners?
Ball?
Yeah.
Seven.
That's amazing.
More years for me with the Mariners than in the minor leagues, which is pretty exciting.
Aaron, what do you remember about your first caravan? If I remember correctly, you pretty much got off a plane, came straight here to do a hot stove.
You know,
show.
I was thinking about that today when I was coming into the studio. Is that like my first ever on air with the Mariners? Not that anybody cares, was in this studio on the hot stove, and I was terrified, right? I mean, like, imagine you've been on the other side of the country covering AAA baseball, and now you come to an actual city that has a baseball team that has real players on it, and you have no idea what this Shannon Dreher lady is going to ask you about it. And so, like, the amount of prep for that hot stove show was more the prep than I've ever done for anything in my life. I was terrified. I also stumbled on, Gary, you and me talking to each other when Blake Devon was traded. Gary interviewed me in 2011 or 10, 2010?
Yeah, I think that's right.
How has that not been on a Sunday show or anything like that?
It needs
that
to be.
Yet?
I know. I still have.
I'm sure
that.
It's not the Costas interview.
It's not. It's not Eric with the C.
Why aren't we playing that again? We should play that every show.
Gary, is it because that's all you could get, or?
Yeah. I didn't know him at the time. Had I known him, I probably would have gone in a different direction.
Yeah, pass on that. Yeah. But thanks for that's a really good rabbit hole you took us down there, Blow. I feel like you've contributed already. I think your night's done.
I'm going out on the caravan on Thursday morning, and looking forward to it. But I knew that that was going to work its way into the show at some point. I just didn't know it was going to be
way to restrain yourself.
I couldn't help it.
Now, where are you going on the caravan?
I will be flying into Spokane. And we will be trekking around, and then Friday night we're finishing up in Pasco.
Okay.
You get Coeur d'Alene?
I think I get a glimpse of it. Yeah.
They won't let you any closer.
Well, no, because once we get in there, you know, you I think it's an elementary school, and then it's the hospital,
sure.
And then it's the radio thing, and then we have to get on the bus and work our way towards the Tri-Cities. So
I will say this is also a very humorous event from the caravan. At the same VA hospital, there was in that same autograph signing, a veteran asked Justice Sheffield why his headshot, which he autographed, was not a picture of him playing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, like Chasen Bradford's photo was of him pitching. Why wasn't Justice's picture of him pitching as well? And Justice explained, well, you know, actually, I haven't actually played for the Mariners yet. I was just traded for from the Yankees. And this kind gentleman said, oh, really? Who did we trade to get you? James Paxton. What? didn't he throw a no-hitter? I really like James Paxton.
A lot of people do. I like James.
This guy goes off for like 5 minutes on Justice because he's not James Paxton. And I will say, I think we're going to really enjoy being around Justice Sheffield. I know you guys had a chance to talk to him last week. Yep. What did you think of him?
I thought it was great talking to him. We haven't met him, so I'm kind of jealous you've spent time and you were there when he said he's never been in this part of the country, and you've been like on a bus as he experiences looking around and seeing things that are probably a little different than Tennessee.
Yeah, his first time to Seattle, he said, was when he landed to come on the caravan. But he's just a really easygoing kind of country guy who has high expectations for himself, and obviously the Mariners do as well. Yeah. And I did enjoy how this is like welcome to the Mariners caravan, the first event that we do as a group. Kind of a public forum setting, and each one of the guys talks a little bit about themselves, and we open it up for questions, and I call on somebody in the front row, and this adult who should know better said, Justice, we're really excited to have you with the Mariners. What is it that you can do that will let you take over for Felix as the ace of the Mariners staff? I thought he did a very good job answering that question with, you know, sir, I think there's only one Felix Hernandez, and he's a generational pitcher, and I think I'm just going to be excited to be on a 25-man roster for an entire season and make my first full year in the big leagues.
Well done.
Yeah, yeah. He was terrific.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed talking with him, and we're going to have a chance to catch up with the Caravan, which tonight was in Wenatchee. We'll have a chance to talk with Sean Armstrong, who we saw last year when the rosters expanded, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit with Sean. It was, Flo, I know you either went through this or knew people who went through this, but it was a unique situation where he was out of options, and Sean just could not be with the big league club until the rosters expanded because he wouldn't have been able to move in a bullpen that already had a number of guys who could not be optioned down. And as a result, he basically dominated AAA, and when he came up to the Mariners for the final month, he was really impressive.
I thought he made the most of September, he's going to be a big part of the bullpen this year. And it's the way the game works. Sometimes it's unfortunate. Sometimes it's a number situation. You mentioned the option and how this thing works for guys, and unfortunately you can be doing your job and doing it well, but there's just not an opportunity at the moment, and you have to be patient with that. But the thing that you want to do more than anything else is when you have the type of year that you mentioned he was having in the minor leagues is when you get that opportunity at the major league level to show and show well, and he certainly did that. And I know that Scott Servais is going to see him a lot this spring.
There's no doubt about that. We will be talking with Sean Armstrong. Hot Stove Show just underway. Hour number one is just off the ground. Sean Armstrong, Mariners reliever, joins us next after this timeout.
Back to more of The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Sean's been a performer and a, let's call it a strikeout artist, at the minor league levels on through AAA. He's done it throughout his entire career. And as a result, we were able to have the good fortune of having a guy who really came into his own through the course of the AAA season and has done a terrific job since joining the big league club, and I think caught the attention of not just the staff but the organization around him.
Yeah, some nice praise there from a familiar voice, General Manager Jerry Dipoto, talking about our next guest, Sean Armstrong, who joins us from the Mariners Caravan, who made a pit stop tonight in Wenatchee. Sean, it's glad to have you here on the Hot Stove. How are you doing? How's the Caravan going for you?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. It's actually going good. We're in between Wenatchee and Spokane now to do our next stop tomorrow. But it's been actually a lot of fun. We've been able to interact with quite a few fans at different locations. We also visited Mission View Elementary today and talked about this dream program they're putting together. And, you know, it's like I said, it's been a lot of fun, and the fans have been great.
Sean, have you been to that part of the state before?
No, I have not. So like it's very cool to see all the different areas and, you know, like meet all the different people and talk about all their interests and everything like that. And so, I mean, I love Seattle and, you know, love the Tacoma area, but it's very, very cool to see all the different areas around Seattle as well.
Sean, I don't know if you heard Jerry Dipoto talking about you just before we brought you on the air, but he basically mentioned all the strikeouts through the minor leagues, but I would like to know just what your general thoughts were once you were able to join the club in September and maybe some of the positives from that, some of the things you learned.
I mean, you know, I've been asked that question a couple of times the past 2 days as well, you know, like what's the difference, you know, between Cleveland and Seattle and, you know, everything like that. But, you know, just going up there and, you know, the atmosphere that the veterans and everything created, and, you know, it was just that bond, like that family bond. So as soon as I got there, I felt welcome. You know, same thing with spring training. Just everybody just kind of kept you in tune with things, looked out for one another, and it just made it easy. And, you know, having that in the clubhouse and, you know, travel and everything, and then getting out to the bullpen and having, you know, that big league atmosphere, it just made playing the game that much easier. And, you know, obviously this game's as hard as it is, but when you have, you know, 24 other guys and all the coaches and everything, you know, supporting you and working towards one goal, it makes your job, like I said, a little easier at times. So,
Mariners reliever Sean Armstrong is our guest here on the Hot Stove Show. Sean, your season last year was really kind of unique in a number of ways. First of all, you're drafted by the Indians, you're developed by the Indians. It's the only baseball family that you know as a professional. You then come over to the Mariners last year, your first year in the organization, and no matter how well you pitch, and you pitch very well with Tacoma, You could have struck out every batter you faced. You were basically landlocked in Tacoma because you were simply out of options. If you'd been come up, I'm telling you everything you already know. But for listeners who don't remember, had you come up to the Mariners, there would have been no way for them to option you back down to the Rainiers, and it really kind of would have held the bullpen hostage. So how did you manage to go about your business in such a professional way in Tacoma, knowing really there was no hope for a call-up until the rosters expanded? And then, of course, once they expanded and you came up, you were dynamite for the Mariners.
I mean, it's just one of those things. I mean, being up, before that and being optioned, 21 times in Cleveland over 3 years, obviously frustration tends to happen at times, especially whenever you are having success and you're so hungry to get that opportunity, to go up there and try and help a ball club to win, especially a ball club that was in a playoff race. But at the end of the day, my wife stresses this to me. You can't let frustration build up and all that stuff. And this is a game of failure. So, I mean, if you let the frustrations and all that stuff and you worry about all the other things that can happen, you're going to run yourself out of the game in general, I just try and stay in the moment, whatever that moment may be. Last year it was Tacoma, and trying, to help get, our team down there every chance to win whenever, I could. And, I think if you just, stay in the moment and don't worry about the other little things around you, I think you just kind of keep yourself on that tunnel vision. And, the ultimate goal is to play in the big leagues as long as possible and have the most success. And that's what I try and do each and every day.
Sean, when you got to Seattle, I think we saw a lot of what we had heard about you and why Jerry DePoto went and got you, regardless of situation. And you were up and you were performing. You obviously performed with the Rainiers, had some incredible streaks there. What did you do baseball-wise with your pitching to better yourself last year when you were not with the big league club?
I mean, everyone knows that the game is turning to the sabermetrics and analytics and, the video analysis and all that stuff. And, with the transition as well, being in AAA last year, working with the staff down there, it gave me the opportunity to, really tune in and, better my knowledge towards that as well. So, working with Lance Painter and the catchers down there, each and every single day, each outing, using the Rapsodo unit and the bullpens and everything like that, you get to see all that information with the instant feedback, and you don't have to just watch video. So, being able to look at that stuff and, learn more about myself and, just keep working, hard and trying to get better every single day. I think, being down there and working with, because we had a great group of guys down there, as a pitching staff as well. And I think that core group, relying on one another and then, trusting your stuff and trusting the coaches, it just really helped me and, helped me learn a lot more about myself as well to better me for this year and the seasons to come.
Sean, obviously a lot of changes. A lot of your teammates from September have moved on. And as you mentioned, it's kind of the nature of the business at times, but especially it's been the case over the course of the winter here in Seattle. So there's a real opportunity for you going into spring training. One, do you look at it that way? And two, is there a specific role that you eventually see yourself falling into?
I mean, obviously anybody's goal is to, be, the ace of the staff or a closer of the staff or whatever. I just want to be there. I want to be there all year. I want to have an opportunity, to pitch in the big leagues all year. And, we are going to have new faces. And, Marco and I have been asked this question as well, on the caravan this week. And, it's just going to take one of us relying on one another, not looking at all big, grand scheme of things, but taking it a day at a time and trying to win each and every day, And if we can, rely on one another and trust one another, that's what's going to make a team good, And the roles and all that stuff, they're all going to play itself out. I mean, whoever pitches the best, they're going to have, certain roles. So, I think if we try and help each other and, we go out there and just try and have success and lean on one another, I think we're going to be good. And all the roles and all that stuff, service, photo, all those guys, they're going to make those decisions and everything's going to pan out the way it should. And I just think we're very excited to get down to spring, meet everybody, start working together, and, take that trip to Japan and have a little bonding experience before, the grind of the season and everything starts.
Sean Armstrong is our guest, Mariners reliever, taking a few moments out of his duties and time on the Mariners caravan to join us here on the Hot Stove Show. Now, Sean, you mentioned the Rapsodo machine that you worked with when you were in Tacoma, and not that I am any expert on it, but basically you're looking at a lot of the advanced movements and data and metrics on your pitches with that. I'm curious to hear you talk about your fastball, because in today's era, your fastball, which was, what do you say, Sean, 94, 95 in that area in terms of velocity?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So it's a good fastball, right? But it's not what we're seeing 100, 99, 98, but it's a very good fastball. You threw it often, as a lot of relievers would. And, Sean, I mean, guys were barely touching it. They hit just over 100 on it, and you gave up one extra base hit in a month's worth of time with the big leagues on that fastball. What is it that you know about that pitch that made it such a tough pitch to hit for opposing hitters at the big league level?
Well, and that's one of the discussions that DePoto and Service and I had whenever I did get, DFA'd an option down in spring training was, the analytical stuff that was down, and I never really paid much attention to it. And again, after talking about it this year, I actually bought a Rap Soda unit myself so that every single session and throwing and stuff this off season, I can work on it so that I can see the consistencies and all that stuff. And, everybody talks about spin rate, and, I'm fortunate enough that whenever I'm pitching, I do have a high spin rate on my fastball. And I think just, being aggressive and having confidence in anything you throw, I think that's what kind of gives you success in that sort of thing. Look at Wade LeBlanc. He's not an overpowering guy, but he goes up there and makes hitters look foolish day in and day out with his fastball as well. And he's able to place it, and he has a pretty good spin rate as well in his stuff. And I think, just getting into that and looking at all of the numbers and data and everything, it just, in my opinion, that's kind of why I have an advantage with the fastball, is because I do have a high spin rate and I'm just aggressive with it and counts, and I trust it. I mean, trusting your pitches, not second guessing it, that gives you a little bit more of an advantage as well.
Where does that put you coming into spring training as opposed to a year ago?
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Where does just having that knowledge now and having that tool that you've been able to utilize, where does that put you as opposed to a year ago when you were coming into spring training?
I think it just really goes to, self-awareness. And for me, that's kind of why I've been working so diligently with the Rap Soda this offseason, is so that whenever I do see, a curveball do one thing or a fastball or cutter do another thing, I've seen it, over and over again by throwing my bullpens coming into spring, then it's like I have a very good idea of what I did wrong, based on the video that I've taken with that number matched up. So I just think it gives you that availability to make adjustments from pitch to pitch, not batter to batter or outing to outing, whenever, every pitch matters in the big leagues and, every game matters. So being able to, make those adjustments from, like I said, pitch to pitch, I think that gives you the advantage, because the hitter, he wants to do everything he can to get a, base hit, whatever against you. So being able to make adjustments to his swing patterns and everything just makes you, a student of the game, and you can continuously learn every single day.
Sean, two very brief questions for you before we let you go. First of all, is this becoming a common thing for pitchers to have their own Rap Soda machine? Because these are not cheap, obviously.
I think you see more and more people getting them. For instance, Nick Vincent called me about 10 days ago and, was asking me about it and all that stuff, and he actually ended up purchasing one himself. For guys that don't work out in big facilities and so forth, yeah, we sometimes have to, fund our own things to, continuously learn and continue to better ourselves. So, for me, I don't work out at a facility that has one, so I purchased one for the facility so that I can work on it day in and day out. And also all the guys that are in there training with me, like Max Posey, he's working out with me this offseason in the same facility. So, he's a teammate of mine. I want him to be able to use that, that stuff as well. So I think, all of us working together and everything, yes, you see a lot more people buying them because we all want to better ourselves and continue to learn and help each other as well.
And finally, Sean, and I'll be honest, how many seats is Marco taking up on the bus? Is he a 9-seat guy? the shoes alone, right? That's got to be at least 3.
He's got a little pizza box beside him right now, but he's doing good. He's only taking up 1 seat.
Only one.
Playing a little Mario Kart. Yeah, he's right behind me. He's playing a little Mario Kart right now, having a little competition. So, I think the moose is beating him right now. But
Well, you give Marco our very best, would you, Sean? It's been great talking with you. Thank you for carving out some time on the bus ride to make sure you get a couple of slices of that pizza. And we look forward to catching up with you more in Peoria, Sean.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
There is Mariners reliever Sean Armstrong. Very interesting conversation. Good to catch up with him a little bit. Well, hey, don't miss the opportunity of a lifetime to join the Mariners as we'll be traveling to Tokyo, Japan, of course, to open the 2019 season. We are very excited to invite you as we face Tokyo's own Yomiuri Giants for a pair of exhibition games before opening the regular season against the A's on March 20th, March 21st as well. So those are actual games. That's essentially opening day for the Mariners against Oakland in Japan, those two games, with exhibition games ahead of time. Travel packages are available while supplies last at mariners.com/Japan. So we hope to see you in Tokyo. We're all very much looking forward to that. When we come back, as the Hot Stove Show continues, we'll be joined by Seattle Times columnist Larry Stone. A lot to talk to Larry about. All that's coming up after this timeout.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Hour number one of the Hot Stove Show continuing. Happy you're with us here tonight. Aaron Goldsmith, Mike Blowers, Shanna Dreher, Gary Hill as well. And it's nice to have a very familiar voice on the line with us for a couple of segments tonight. Seattle Times columnist Larry Stone. Larry, I haven't seen you at all this winter. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Good to talk to all of you.
Absolutely. I know you've been, now that you're not on the beat every day, you've been, of course, covering all the sports. Ready to start kind of turning your focus more to baseball as we have hit the new year and spring training is beginning to approach?
Oh, absolutely. As soon as Christmas is over, I get into baseball. I get into baseball gear. The old beat writer in me comes out. And, it's less than a month, as I'm sure you've talked about. It's right there.
Absolutely. Well, before we start talking Mariners, Larry, we want to talk to you about a guy that you covered for, my goodness, essentially since day one of his career, if not before that, a native son, and very tragically, Mel Stottlemyre Sr. passing away on Sunday after a long, lengthy battle with cancer. And it is important to remember how good Mel was as a coach and certainly as a player as well, as we take a listen.
Two strikes, two out. No one on, the Yankees 8. Cardinals 3 in the bottom of the ninth inning. Stottlemyre kicks, delivers a curve that's inside. 1-2. Young right-hander gets the sign from Howard. Curve swing and a miss, strike 3. That's it. The Yankees win it, 8-3.
Facing Bob Gibson in the 64 World Series, that was game two. A guy who in many ways is known more for what he did as a pitching coach for the Yankees and the Mets as well, but was just a tremendous star on the mound as well. You wrote a beautiful piece, Larry, about the life of Mel Stottlemyre Sr., of course, his son, former pitching coach for the Mariners. What was it like for you to write that piece, Larry?
Well, that one was kind of from the heart. When I first got out of college and started my professional career way back in 1979, the job I got out of college was at the Yakima Herald Republic. And, I didn't know anything about Yakima and its history, but it didn't take long to learn that as I wrote, that Mel and the Stottlemyre family was royalty in Yakima. He was from Mabton, which was a tiny little town, population 900, about 45 miles from Yakima in the valley. And when I got there, his sons were stars. They were about to enter high school. His youngest son, tragically, Jason, died about a year after I got there from leukemia. Everybody said he was going to be the best of the bunch. And the older two pitched in the major leagues. And Todd, who I'm sure Mike faced a few times, was a very good pitcher. Mel Jr. had some arm problems, so he just had a brief career. Todd was an ace almost for the Blue Jays and won a couple of World Series. But I just got to know the family from covering the kids. And so I've known the Stottlemyre family for literally 40 years and sort of renewed acquaintances when I came to Seattle and they had settled here as well. And I covered Todd with the A's in the mid-90s when I was working in San Francisco. So I always seemed to have some sort of link to the Stottlemyre family. So it was really really sad when Mel died this weekend. And the way he's been really, really sick for about the last 7 or 8 years, just one setback after another. It's really sad. He had the bone marrow cancer originally cropped up in 1999, and he had treatment, and everything looked good. It was in remission, and then it just came back with a vengeance about 7 or 8 years ago, and he's fought it ever since. And finally died on Sunday.
Larry, when you talk about Mel, and Shannon and I were talking about this briefly before we came back on the air, and you look at his playing career, and Aaron mentioned it, a terrific pitcher. And I asked Shannon, I said, do you think he was a Hall of Famer? And she thought that because he had the arm injury and cut his career a little bit short, that probably hindered him. But if he hadn't been hurt, he would have been a Hall of Famer. What do you think about him, and why can't we look at his entire body of work when you talk about Hall of Famers? We're also talking about Lou a little bit, but when you talk about Mel and his career and the job that he has done as a pitching coach and all the people he has touched in this game, what a career he's had.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I started to think about that today as well. When he was on the Hall of Fame ballot, you know, as you are 5 years after you retire, and he got 3 votes. I checked it today. And so you need 5% to stay on the ballot. So he was one and done on the ballot. But I think that there's something to what you said, there is another route to the Hall of Fame, and that's the Veterans Committee. And that does look at the totality of your career. And that's why Lou, almost made it and should have made it, last month. Because you look, he wasn't quite a Hall of Famer as a player, but when you throw in his managing, to me, that should have put him over the top. And I think you could look at Mel the same way, a very, very good pitcher. He had 40 shutouts, which is the same number exactly as Sandy Koufax had. They both had 40 shutouts in their career. Five All-Star teams. He won 20 games 3 times. The complete games are just outrageous when you compare him to what guys do today. I think he had 25 complete games one season. And then, as you mentioned, he won a World Series with the Mets in 86 as the pitching coach, with the Dwight Gooden, Sid Fernandez staff, and then with Joe Torre, he won 4 more World Series titles. So that's 5 rings pitched in a World Series as a pitcher. To me, that warrants consideration for sure.
I think I have something new to yell at Jeff Idelson about the next time I see him. I will be on that. Hey, Larry, just in case anybody hasn't read it, and you should read this column, in my book, he's a Hall of Fame baseball person, but as a person, he is absolutely a Hall of Famer. Can you relay the story from Yakima about the former ball player that he ran into?
Yeah, it was a guy named Harlan Clift, who, when you look at, look up his stats on Baseball Reference sometime. He was a good player in the 30s, and he was from Yakima, and his career was long over. He was probably in his 70s, and I just heard from somebody that he was living in this trailer home in near poverty. So I just went out there and knocked on his door one day, and he was happy to talk, and I did a story. It's like one of the first really in-depth kind of feature stories I did in my career. I was really young. And I found out later, years later, that from Todd, that story had moved Mel so much, Mel Sr., that he went out and he said, you know, I gotta talk to this guy. I gotta help this guy. So he took the boys, who were at the time teenagers, and just started a relationship with Harlan Clift and helped him out. And, I think my understanding was he stayed in touch with Harlan. He didn't live too much longer after that. But, that's kind of a measure of the guy and his sort of his moral standards that he had. And, I was real touched when I found out from Todd that story had prompted that.
Arlen Clift, along with Joe DiMaggio and Lou Gehrig, all three of them were 1937 All-Stars. So, yeah, a pretty good career, especially back in 37. Well, we are very happy to have Larry Stone with us here on tonight's Hot Stove. When we come back, Larry's going to hang with us through the commercial break. And when we return, we're going to be talking, as you might imagine, all things Edgar and Cooperstown related. So Larry Stone joins us on the other side of this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
He's a 300, 400, 500 guy for his career. They're like 18 of those guys in history.
Then when you take those specific numbers and try to find people that have a higher average, higher on base, and a higher slugging than him, there are like seven guys in Major League history that have better numbers than him. And I covered baseball significantly at the time of his prime. And, Mike, you know this. When you ask people, like, who are the best hitters in the American League, and Edgar Martinez's name always came up.
Recognizable voice, ESPN's Tim Kirchen, who joined us a couple of years ago during a spring training broadcast. And when we asked him about Edgar Martinez and the Hall of Fame, Mike, I will be honest, the first thing he said was, well, guys. And when he kind of went down like that, I thought, oh, no, is he just going to roast this whole thing? And then he went on this soapbox.
He was very passionate
about it.
For
like a half inning about why Edgar belongs in Cooperstown, as we were joined once again by Seattle Times columnist Larry Stone. And Larry, we want to talk about the book that you have written with Edgar, which comes out this summer. We also, of course, want to talk about Edgar and his final year of eligibility for the Baseball Hall of Fame. Right now, he's at 90.4%. You, of course, need 75%. He's at a net, looks like 17 votes up from last year. 18 new voters have voted for him. One voter who voted for him in the past did not vote for him this year, so a plus 17 in that regard. How are you feeling about Edgar's chances to be in the Hall of Fame class of 2019?
Well, I'm knocking on wood, and at the risk of jinxing things, I feel real, real good. I mean, he started off real strong last year. I mean, everything we know is thanks to Ryan Thibodeau out of Oakland, who runs the Hall of Fame tracker. And now it's to the point where he had a scrounge for votes when he first started. Now writers just send their votes straight to him almost before they turn him into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, when votes are announced, he tracks them, and there's about 40%. Are accounted for of what is the expected number, around 430 total, so about 40% of that. And Edgar's still sitting at 90%. Last year he started to drop as time went on, and then once the vote was made public, he had an even steeper drop from people who hadn't made their votes public. But now he's at a point where he can even sustain the non-public votes that probably won't be as strong for him as the public votes. But he's knocking on wood again. I think he's at a really, really good spot. And there's people now who, professional forecasters, almost like an election, like a political election, who crunch the numbers and make their forecasts of how many votes people are going to get based on probability and the like, and almost everyone I've seen has them finishing at around 83-82%. So finally, I mean, this was a guy who was sitting at 28% not that long ago. It's just been an unbelievable rise. I to be honest, I had all but given up hope at about halfway through the 10 years. You know, when he started, you had 15 years, and then they changed the rules on him, and it, you know, suddenly went from 15 years on the ballot to 10 years. And about halfway through that, he was not sitting in a good spot. And then something just amazing happened, and he just started this. There's started to be this groundswell, and it's been up, up, up ever since.
How much do you give credit to the new numbers, the new analytics in the game? Because if you look at those numbers, Gar, I think his position gets even stronger.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think, you know, this started with Burt Blyleven. You know, a couple of analysts just took it as their cause and convinced people by writing persuasive essays on the Internet and, you know, various websites, and got Burt Blyleven, I convinced, into the Hall of Fame, I think on his last or next to last try. And some influential people have taken up Edgar's cause. You know, Jay Jaffe from Sports Illustrated, most prominently, you know, Joe Posnanski, guys that people respect and pay attention to, and Tim Kirchen and Jason Stark, people like that. And so when, you know, I tried to do my own part, and when, and I think that started to turn the tide a little bit, and these things seem to pick up their own momentum. You know, when he reached 70% last year, you know, it looked very promising going into his final year, because no one who had ever reached 70% had not gotten into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, once that momentum starts to build,
you know, it goes both ways. It could be a negative or it could be a positive, and now it's definitely a positive for Edgar.
So ballot number 180 has been turned in the last few minutes. Kevin Martinez tweets, Edgar is now at 90.6% of the public vote. So Edgar doing very well, which is great to see. Larry, you've been writing the book, and of course you've known Edgar for a long time. You've covered him. How is it different writing a book about him and the time that you've spent with him?
Well, we spent a lot of time together during the season. We kind of, whenever the team was home, I would head out to his house and sit in his living room for, we did it an hour and a half at a time, because anything more and your head starts to swim. So we just dug into his life and sort of went chronologically pretty much. And, you know, he had to do some prying, because Edgar's a private guy, but there are certain topics that really got him going that I think are going to be interesting to people. I'm sure Mike will know that talking about sort of the mental side of baseball and was something that he just loves to talk about. And, you know, there's a whole chapter on just his thoughts on the mental side of baseball and visualization and goal setting and stuff like that. That's what, I mean, he truly believes that helped his career as much as anything, was as much his mind as his talent. And so, yeah, it was a great experience. I mean, Edgar's a wonderful man, and you know, the more I got to know of him, the more I liked him, and the more I liked the process.
The book is called Edgar, an Autobiography, and Larry, do I understand it correctly that June of this year the book will be coming out?
June is the published date, and hopefully a nice tie-in to a little ceremony in July.
Was there any exact reason for the timing of the book? I'm curious how this idea kind of germinated, how it came about. You, of course, would be a natural fit to help write this book, but just kind of the genesis of it all.
Well, the genesis was, I've been kicking this around for a long time, and I finally said it's the time to do it. So I approached him in spring training last year, and I pulled him aside on one of the fields and explained what I wanted to do, and he said, okay, let's do it. So that was the genesis of it. And I wasn't sure if he really meant it, so I came back to him after spring training and said, you know that book that I mentioned, do you really want to do that? And he goes, yeah, let's do it. And so we started the process, got a publisher, and I interviewed a lot of people, including Mike Blowers, who were, you know, knew him as well as anybody, former players, family members, and the like. And I have little vignettes in there from various people talking about Edgar, in addition to, you know, it's written in his voice telling about his life.
Did you, when you go through it and you were talking about all the different things and you covered him his entire career and have known him for a very long time, when you start to interview somebody like you did, and even if it was some of the other people that you spoke to, anything new that you learned about Edgar that you didn't know when he was a player?
Well, I was really fascinated by his early life before he started baseball. The story of how he was born in New York and was living in New York, and then his parents split up, so he moved in with his grandparents. And then when he was a really young child, 8 or 9, his parents got back together and wanted to take the kids back to New York, and Edgar did not want to go. So he got up on the roof when the parents came to take him back to New York. He got up on the roof and hid, lay down on the roof so no one could find him, and everyone was calling for him and no one could find him. So finally his grandfather said, you'd better go. So his parents left when Edgar stayed back in Puerto Rico. And he's convinced that if he had gone to New York, he would not have had a baseball career, because his dad was not keen on the boys playing baseball back in New York. He wanted to work and study for their future. So just that moment of staying at, you know, and he felt a great loyalty to his grandparents, because they had raised him when his parents weren't there. And they were getting older and needed his help. And I mean, it just says so much about Edgar that he felt this duty to his grandparents to as they became older and frailer, and he had to he had to help them out. They would have been lost if he had left. So he stayed there out of sort of an obligation to his grandparents. So that's I go into much more detail in that on that in the book. But there's so many moments in his life early on, and even once his career started, where he came so close to not having this career. I mean, he wasn't even signed out of high school, no interest in him. He went to college and started a job and given up on baseball and just went to this tryout camp just almost on a whim and got signed for, $4,000 by Marty Martinez, the Mariners scout. And then his first year in Bellingham, he hit 173 and thought he was going to get released. They called him into the office and he thought for sure it was, they're going to release me. And what they told him was, we want you to go to Arizona Instructional League. And, he was overjoyed and his career took off from there.
Larry, with it all in front of you, when would you kind of pinpoint of Edgar turning into the Edgar that Edgar would be as a hitter?
I think it was when the funny thing is that he was pegged as a good field, no-hit guy coming up through the minors. They moved him to second base because they didn't think, temporarily, because they didn't think he had the bat for a corner infield spot. And then he just gradually put on muscle, and it was around 87 when he went to Calgary and won the batting title. Started to get some pop, won the the PCL batting title. And then I think he started changing some minds, but the Mariners had Jim Presley and they had Darnell Coles ahead of him. So, he was up and down 87, 88, 89 years where he was just tearing up the PCL at Calgary. And, looking back, if he had been called up when he should have been, when he was hitting 350 in the minor leagues, we might not be having this Hall of Fame debate, because you could probably add another 500 hits to his total, and he would have been pushing 3,000. So it's a whole different thing. And a lot of Mariner executives looking back wonder why they didn't go with Edgar sooner. But he finally got the full time job in 1990, and then never looked back from that point.
Larry, very gracious of you to join us for a couple of segments here tonight. We are eagerly anticipating the book, Edgar, an Autobiography, coming out this summer in June of 2019. And, Larry, I think we'll probably be talking a little bit more about Edgar and the book between now and then. Thank you for joining us here tonight.
All right. I always enjoyed being on with you guys. Thanks.
We'll be seeing Larry down in Peoria at spring training. Larry Stone, Seattle Times columnist. Well, fans, be sure to be on hand for all the action of the 2019 Mariners season by becoming a season ticket holder tonight. Whether you are looking to spend quality time with your family or friends or have FaceTime with your employees and clients, make the ballpark your Northwest summer home with packages starting at just 10 games. You can visit mariners.com/19 for more information. Hour number two is just around the corner of the hot stove. We'll be joined by Meg Rally, the editor for fangraphs.com. Also Mitch Canham, a Northwest native and the new AA manager for the Seattle Mariners, will be joining us as well. But we'll send you to break with just a little more, Edgar.
So perhaps Edgar has passed our way for the last time. And listen. What a fantastic tribute to a fantastic man.